Anitha, Andrea, and I hope we can convince you that there's something very special about our 3D printed Bliss Tactile symbols. So the next three slides go into some depth on our backgrounds, but I'm just going to skip over them and say that I'm an ex-engineer. Anitha is a teacher of the visually impaired, and Andrea is a speech and language pathologist. We're all volunteers in this effort. So we have no relevant financial relationships, nor relevant non-financial relationships to disclose. We're also working with a team of volunteer therapists, and you'll get a chance to see a few of them further on in this presentation. So if you walk away from this presentation with a working understanding of these three topics, I'm not even going to give you a chance to read them. But we think you'll walk away with those anyway. And we believe then you'll be well positioned to leverage the new technology as well as our free resources to help your students build communication skills free of external limitations. Here's our agenda. So we'll begin by setting a baseline understanding of tactile and tangible symbols. And then we'll credit Project Core for their creative insight before we talk about how we think their effort falls short of an optimal tactile symbol system. On the other hand, we think we do have an optimal system based on Bliss symbolics. So we'll spend some time introducing you to Bliss symbols as well as our Bliss tactile symbols. We've created an entire ecosystem around our symbols, and we want you to know how to obtain all those free resources. And we're talking about more than just ideas. So we'll share our thoughts and experiences as well as the thoughts and experiences of people like Anitha and Andrea when using these symbols in the classroom. You'll get a chance to ask any question you'd like, though it would really be great if you could hold them to this point in the presentation. If there's time, we'd like to share with you a real special DIY device that you can use along with our symbols to give them a voice. We call it the Voice It, as well as some third-party products and services that you may choose to take advantage of along with our symbols. We have all that stuff up here at the front table, so please come up and visit us after the presentation and ask any further questions, but check all this stuff out. All right, so you've all seen tactile and tangible symbols before, even if just in pictures. They're used by people who are blind or visually impaired or deafblind to communicate their needs and desires or gather information about the world around them. The symbol can incorporate a physical object or simply have a unique tactile profile. The slide shows two examples of traditional tactile symbols. The one on top has a plastic starfish glued to a card labeled star. Below that is a round card with the label snow and has seven or so raised black and white dots. So traditionally, these tactile symbols have been constructed by gluing some physical object onto a rigid backing. That physical object may be clearly associated with the symbol's referent. So the slide now shows a plastic spoon or part of a plastic spoon glued to a card and labeled eat. Less tangible symbols are harder to create, or less tangible concepts are harder to create effective symbols for. So in this case, we show a symbol with a raised circle representing the concept yes. And you'll find lots of variation between symbol designers for less tangible concepts. There are other issues like, how do you deal with a physically large thing, like a tree? Do you use a leaf? Do you use a piece of bark? Or something that's very complex or multi-component? Is a tennis ball really the best representation of gym class? I don't know. Depends on what they're teaching that week, right? Traditional tactile sets rarely involve more than 50 to 100 concepts. And when you're only creating a few tactile symbols, there really isn't a lot of motivation to first establish a set of rules for design and then follow those rules. When there are no rules, then there's often little conceptual carryover from symbol to even related symbol. And such, as such, these kinds of symbols have to be learned through rote memorization. And probably, I think, the most telling aspect of traditional tactile symbols, and for that matter, popular graphic image sets, is they're always accompanied by a text label. That's because it's going to be difficult for the communication partner to a priori connect the shape to the symbol's referent. So only by first reading that text can you kind of back into why that shape was chosen. Sometimes not even then. So this symbol shows a piece of string glued horizontally onto a card, and the concept is want. I can't figure out how that's possible, how that is want. I know it's closely tied to a PCS symbol in a way, but it's missing a lot of components. So this slide shows 11 tactile symbols from two different sets. And it's, in a few cases, there it's relatively intuitive what the symbol is representing. For example, using the an arrow to represent the concept to go, okay. But why a beaded triangle for the concept more? And I'm sure everyone in the room here can rationalize why a cross would represent the concept to help, especially a red cross, right? Well, this one looks like it's brown sandpaper. Now, I just ask you to take a moment and think about how much cultural knowledge you needed to tie a cross, red or otherwise, to the concept to help. Whoops, I went too fast. Got one. So the symbols on the right, they're at least all internally consistent. They all use a piece of string to represent the concept now or today. But where does that symbol set go when you want to add a new thing like to like to the symbol set? All that internal consistency has to be thrown right out. And imagine trying to guess what each of these symbols means without that label. We're going to try. All right? So these images are taken from two very popular tactile image sets, or tactile symbol sets. I have three physical objects and three virtual shapes. I have a rectangle of tin foil, three beads on a string, a set of plastic lips. Then I have a cross or an X, three ramps, and for lack of a better name, a cresting wave. Take a moment and try to predict what each of these represents. Time's up. The triangle or the tinfoil represents a snack or snack time. The three beads are occupational therapy. The lips, speech therapy. The cross or the X is not. The three ramps is finished. And the cresting wave is to get. Oh, I wanted to say while I was still on that slide, but I pressed it anyway. Imagine, I'm not going to ask how well anyone did, but I would ask you to think about the fact that the person relying on those raised shapes can't take advantage of that partner text. So let's switch gears a bit here and let's talk about what I think is a breakthrough in tactile symbols. Project CORE, I'm sure you've all heard of it, is a program of the Center for Literacy and Disability Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. They established a set of 36 universal core words. Then they did something special. They also designed 3D printed tactile symbols to support all of those 36 core words. I think this was brilliant. The image on the slide is of an early version of their tactile symbol for the concept to go. It has a raised arrow, the the word go engraved, and raised bliss dots, not bliss, sorry, I jumped ahead. Raised braille dots for the letters G and O. All of those are on the front surface of the symbol. Almost. They made them available for download as STL files for free to the public. Wonderful. STL files are an input to the 3D printing process. And because they're 3D printed, you can make exact copies, as many as you'd like, of each of their designs simply by printing them. Now we're going to hand out some examples. Thank you, Anita. Some examples of the current design for the concept to like. I'd like you to explore them tactily, right? And feel how Braille is rendered on the top surface of a 3D print. And we're going to collect those from you once you've had a chance to evaluate them. We want something else to be in your memory when you leave here rather than these. You just pass them around, feel what they feel like. This is what your students or whoever you're sporting will be feeling. So yes, I think they're a breakthrough. I think that they're brilliant. However, those STL files that they allow you to download for free, they're really basically impossible to modify if for some reason you needed to modify them. There's no support for extending the set beyond the 36. There are 36 universal core words and only 36. Including Braille, engraved text, and the raised shape, all on the surface of that symbol, I think overly complicates the tactile processing of the symbol. If you look at all 36 together, there are no obvious features that tie together related concepts. Even the raised shapes often seem unconnected from what the symbol is trying to represent. So this is on the slide now is an example of their current symbol for the concept more. I can't for the life of me figure out how three raised dots represents the concept more. And again, whenever there's no conceptual or tactile carryover from symbol to symbol, just like the previous sets, they have to be learned through rote memorization. So if the previous two types of symbol sets are non-optimal, what would an optimal tactile symbol system look like? Well, first it would be based on a conceptual language. So there'd be no need for conceptual transformations from that raised shape to the end concept. It would involve simple elements, just a few lines and simple curves, fundamentally two-dimensional, and in that way lowering the required cognitive and tactile load. It would have to be extensible. And by using a generative language, creating new symbols is simply done through reusing existing symbols. The symbol design process itself should be flexible. You and your student should be in complete control of the amount of complexity in the design. And then, because they're 3D printable, making exact copies of your design are as simple as just putting them on the printer and printing them. A standards body should be involved in grounding and validating the language, as well as the creation of any symbols. It should be rules-based. That's one of the roles of the standards bodies, establish a set of rules for symbol design. They should enforce consistency in the specification of symbols on the basis of those rules. It should be independent of culture, this entire symbol set, so that cultural knowledge, like Red Cross, should not be a requirement. The standards body itself should be multilingual and multicultural. So with those criteria in mind, I'm going to spend a little bit of time telling you about the basics of Bliss Symbolics.
If you think it's best to teach children to communicate by using a language instead of a collection of arbitrary images or shapes, I'd like to tell you about the language of Bliss Symbolics. Bliss symbols were developed by Charles Bliss in the 1940s. He was looking for a language that could be learned and used by anyone on Earth. His language is constructed, meaning consciously devised instead of naturally evolved. Ideographic, meaning graphic symbols that represent an idea or concept without phonology. And generative, meaning able to create an infinite number of concepts from an initial finite set. The language is purely conceptual. The symbols don't have to be translated into a spoken language in order to be understood. This has special implications for cognitively disabled individuals. Bliss symbols are constructed using a few straight lines and simple curves. As such, they require less cognitive effort to explore and recognize. For tactile learners, this means that the symbols can be processed more quickly and reliably than symbol sets that are more complex in their construction. Basic Bliss symbolics are pictographic in nature. Their associated concepts relate easily to their graphic. For example, the roof-shaped symbol represents protection. More complex concepts build on these simpler concepts. Here are more simple shapes for simple concepts. More complex concepts can be constructed from these simpler concepts by overlaying one on the other. Here, we see the arrow concepts overlaid on the enclosure and container concepts. Convey new concepts like into, out of, get, and give. A female protector is a mother. A similar and consistent process is used for father. A container with water is a bath. A chair over water is a toilet. Concepts may also be created by appending one basic symbol to another. For example, all feeling words in the symbolics have the heart shape at their core. They are then qualified by appending other shapes to represent specific feelings. Feeling plus up means happy, while feeling plus down means sad. Positive feelings mean good, while negative feelings mean bad. Charles Bliss survived the concentration camps of World War II and was deeply affected by Nazi propaganda. When he created his new language, he wanted the language to clearly indicate when a concept was fundamentally an opinion rather than a fact. An adjective or adverb could lean either way depending on your point of view. He put an unstable angled shape over these kind of concepts. For Charles Bliss, a volcano epitomized action and power, so he drew his action indicator from the shape of a volcano. He asked, what does the eye do? It sees. What does the ear do? It hears, and so on. This is how verbs are easily built from nouns. Our 3D printed Bliss tactile symbols reflect the two types of indicators in the top edge of the symbol. Verbs have an action indicator like top. Adjectives and adverbs have an evaluation indicator like top. Nouns, on the other hand, have a rounded top edge. In addition, you can use filament color to distinguish among the parts of speech. In this case, we've used colors from the Fitzgerald key. The symbols can be enhanced by placing engraved text on the back surface, adding braille to the sides, or including holes at different locations for mounting the symbol on a string. You can learn more about the possibilities of representing concepts through Bliss symbols by visiting these websites and pages.
Okay. So I was really intrigued by this language when I first saw it 40 years ago in college. I hope you feel some of that just yourself right now. And I also hope that you see that this is a language that operates entirely in the conceptual domain. So Bliss symbols are really kind of unlike any other graphic symbol set. They're curated by a multicultural, multilingual, non-proprietary standards body. When a new symbol has to be added to the set of symbols, a collection of individuals are assigned to ensure that that new symbol adheres to all the rules of symbol design and leverages the rest of the language. What sort of process do you think they follow when they need to add a new symbol to PCS or symbol sticks? I don't even know where those rules are.
I think
they just come up with something quick. So the slide shows a screenshot of the homepage for Bliss Symbolics Communication International, or BCI for short. This is the organization that curates Bliss symbols. In 2015, Isaacson and Lloyd saw something special in Bliss symbols that had them wondering about their applicability to the tactile domain. Specifically, they thought, due to their simplicity, features like edges, outlines, and kinesthetic feedback are optimized in raised line renderings of Bliss symbols, which may facilitate recognition of tactile Bliss symbols. In short, the conformational characteristics of Bliss symbols results in stimuli that have minimal complexity or low potential cognitive load, and when rendered as raised lines, have characteristics that may increase the efficiency of perceptual cognitive processes involved in communication with tactile symbols. So this slide shows a few examples of our Bliss tactile symbols. The symbol for to drink, different, and father. We want you to have a hands-on experience with our tactile symbols, so we're going to hand some out right now. Three different kinds. We'd like you to keep these, okay? Take them back and show them to your associates. And while they're being handed out, and they're for you to keep, I'm going to continue. So we make 242 of our symbols available for you to download and 3D print for free from the Volkswitch website. They span the 36 universal core words from Project Core, as well as Gail Van Patenhove's core vocabulary list for students with intellectual disabilities. The slide shows a screenshot of the Volkswitch web page where you can access and download the STLs for individual symbols as well as collections. We also provide a free, easy-to-use symbol designer. You can use that to modify any of our existing symbols and extend the set of symbols by taking advantage of the free graphics from BCI. The screen shows the user interface for the symbol designer, modifying a symbol, adding new symbols, or as simple as choosing options from pull-down lists and typing text into a text box. You can take advantage of the pictographic nature of Bliss symbols to create motivational tools like these Bliss puzzles, which are also 3D printable. The slide shows five images of four puzzles. One of the images is of one of the puzzles disassembled.3D printed explorers and challenge tiles can provide scaffolding for children who need to develop their skills from simple tactile shapes to more complex ones. The slide has four images, two challenge tile sets in white and two explorers in black. And they're just examples of what can be done. All again, 3D printable. And again, we provide a easy to use designer for you to create these kinds of things along with the puzzles based on the needs of your student. You incorporate Bliss tactile symbols into your classrooms just as you would traditional tactile symbols, though we've taken the extra step of creating a few explicit lesson plans to help you get started. The slide shows a printed lesson plan with the Bliss tactile symbols and Bliss Head Explorer that support that lesson plan. Our set of lesson plans is small at this point, and we would love your help as you use these in your classrooms to extend our set. And we provide full support for you to, you know, provide those and add them to the list. Speaking of the classroom, finally, we get around to the people who know what they're talking about. I'm going to turn the presentation over to Anitha and Andrea to talk about their experiences and how these symbols can impact students.
Hi, everybody. So I'm a TVI teacher for the visually impaired, and I work in Douglas County School Districts in Colorado. And so I got in touch with, Ken got in touch with me, and we've been doing volunteering with him for the past 1 year, I think, in getting these bliss symbols to classrooms. So with respect to children with visual impairments, they need access to learning materials presented in more than one sensory modality. And a popular use of 3D printing technology in my discipline is building tactile models for individuals with visual impairment. But TVIs, just like me, they have not fully exploited the benefits of this technology, even though there is a 3D printer in every high school in our district. The meaningful application of 3D printing technology in K-12 schools has been questionable despite the availability of inexpensive 3D printers since 2009. Students with visual impairments and additional disabilities need a communication system using concrete or abstract symbols. And tactile symbols of core vocabulary words are often used for students with visual impairments with and not only visual impairments, it's cognitive, motor, or speech impairments. And access to tangible, portable, and meaningful tactile symbols can improve students' access to social interactions in their community. I have a pie chart in this slide, kind of showing the percentage of students with VI or blindness compared to all other children receiving special education services. According to the Office of Special Education Program, the percentage of students ages 6 through 21 who received services under the category of visual impairments or blindness was 0.4% of all students receiving special education services under IDEA in the school year 2019-2020. According to the annual quota census by APH, American Printing House, in the year 2019, among students with visual impairments, approximately 8.2% are Braille readers, 33.3% are print readers, 10% are auditory readers, 30.4% are non-readers, and 18.1% are pre-readers. As portrayed in this statistics, even within one disability category of visual impairment, you can see that students differ in how they access their curricula, including Braille, print, symbolic, or auditory materials. So when you say visual impairment, it includes both low vision and severe visual impairment that includes partial to total blindness. In this slide, I have a pie chart showing that there are slightly more students with low vision impairment than severe vision impairments. In all, 7.24% of school-age children are visually impaired, of whom 3.9% had low vision and 3.34% had severe visual impairment. And in this slide, I have a picture of three rectangles. The first rectangle shows visual access, that is for low vision students. And then the second rectangle shows tactile access for blind learners. And the third is the auditory access for students with low vision, blind, and physical disabilities. And the idea of any instructional material is to present those materials in multiple formats so that all learners can access those materials seamlessly. So that's why I like the bliss symbols, because it has the auditory access, which is VoiceIt, which Ken will explain later, and then there is visual access, there's high contrast in these symbols, and if you notice, the Braille in these symbols, bliss symbols, is much more easy for tactile than the 3D printed core symbols that we passed on earlier. It's almost pokey, right? So that's why I love bliss symbols. We saw even within the example of students with visual impairments, they vary in how they access their instructional materials. So the idea is for bliss symbols to be accessible to all low vision, tactile and auditory learners. So Bliss symbols for symbolic readers, students with low vision visual access, or students with significant vision loss, they can do it with tactile access, and students with physical disabilities and who cannot access through vision or tactile means can use the VoiceIt for the auditory access. And I'm passing it on to Andrea now.
So I'm an SLP, as of this year, a full-time AAC specialist, but last year and before, 80% SLP and 20% AAC, which meant that I was working, spending a lot of time in classrooms of children with complex bodies who had significant communication needs. And so last year I was part of the pilot project using these symbols with some of my students who had visual impairments and cortical visual impairments. So I'll talk to you a little bit about that. And one of the reasons I wanted to be part of this project was that I was having that difficulty with what symbols do I choose for my students. And I really wanted to think about, I was thinking a lot about taking their perspective when I chose symbols. So if I close my eyes and feel that symbol, does it feel like something I would recognize as representing that object? And you know, no, most of the time, no. The tiny chair on the piece of cardboard does not feel anything like a chair, right? So we are wanting to go the same way that we do with other symbols, which is the child learns the association as they learn the word. It doesn't in the end matter a whole lot what the thing is, as long as they can associate it. And if we're gonna do that anyway, we might as well use a system that builds their language. So I'm thinking this is a good system for that. And now as an educator and as a language teacher, I can spend a lot less time thinking about what do I make, and I can take these symbols that have already been created that already represent an intact language system and think about how I'm going to teach, which is what I as a teacher want to do. So I want to think like an AAC user now, and how am I going to use this to communicate? And try to imagine kind of from the AAC user's perspective, what am I gonna do with this thing now that I have it? One of the advantages that I've found, well, let me start with, when I introduce these to teachers, I get these looks like, what the heck is that, right? Because it looks bizarre and these symbols are not recognizable or iconic in any way to our teachers or to our staff. So I asked Ken to make that short video that you saw earlier saying, this is the history of Bliss and this is what these symbols and here's some examples of how they're made. And that 2-minute video is available on YouTube and is pointed to, I think, in the presentation. So if you're gonna use these to teach, show that video to your teachers, send them the link in your email, that's what it's for. So you can say, here's what they are. And they appreciate that, I have sent it, and they say, oh, when they see it. So I found that very helpful. Another thing I've liked about using them with my kids is these are just a little too big to be chewed and swallowed, right? All my kids are eaters and throwers, so these are very durable. The kids can't chew them. They can't pick the symbol off of here. So all the things that I make with hot glue, take them off, eat them, right? These are not choking hazards by and large. They're a little too big for that, and I put them on strings partly, again, for that reason. I can hold on to them, and they cannot throw them, but they have free access to feel them, and they can't swallow them while I'm holding on like this. So I'm finding them very useful in that matter, again, and they can't pull the symbol part off, but they can feel it really well. So they're very salient. They're salient visually. They're salient tactily. They don't have any extra information on them. And we want to make sure as teachers that they are salient auditorily as well. So when we present them, we're not going to say a lot of extra information. We're going to say it just like we do when we teach language generally, right? We're just going to say the word that we're talking about, and I'll show you a little example of that. First, I'll show you my big fail. Oh, I'm going to have to click to do this. This is when I thought it would be a great idea to hang these on some little strings and present several at a time. So she could choose, this is my first student I tried this with, she could choose, you know, one of them to communicate, and I had several on a string, and here's what happened. Here's my clicker. She has them in her hand. See what she does with them? Ooh, they sound so cool. So don't try that, one at a time. And the next video is just presenting, this is the first time we presented it and paired it with her favorite thing, which was a little stuffed animal, Pete the Cat. We decided not to call it Cat because I don't think she knows that it's a cat. She's pretty much blind. So we just chose the animal symbol. So that's a child that doesn't do a lot of exploring tactily, but she did feel that symbol. So that was one of her first introductions there. Oops. I said a lot of what I wanted to say about this slide already. Make sure that, so when I was introducing that, I didn't say a lot except for cat. There's the cat. Make sure that you're not saying too much. When I had an orientation and mobility teacher do a little, that's my timer to say, be quiet now. So I'll finish this sentence and say one other thing. An orientation and mobility teacher did a little workshop for me and some other SLPs once, and she made us put on blindfolds, and she talked to us, did a little lesson for us in every background noise around us, and all the aides and teachers who were talking around us immediately became very, very noticeable. So when you're talking to your kids with, with vision impairment, be mindful of all that other background noise and your own chatter that you put around your teaching, because it really can make it difficult. We did in our classroom with a couple of the kids who are learning these. We have whatever it is that the current symbol that's being taught in the moment. We have that child's person who's working with them wear it around their wrist and just kind of have it nearby. And right now, that little girl that you just saw is working on take a walk. She requests taking a walk. So the aide just literally walks around with it. And whenever it's time to offer her a walk, she just kind of holds out her hand. And the other thing is, how do you know when you're communicating versus just checking out the symbol, right? You can't just hand it to someone to communicate like you can maybe a PEX in the PEX system, because that's also how you hand it to them to explore. So we've been trying, I tap it on something when I'm communicating with it, and I hold it out when I'm just offering it to feel. So the other way you can do it is, of course, putting it on the voice it, but you'll see that in a minute. So that's all I'm gonna say for now. Other than that, they fit really well on a 7-level communicator, which is a kind of mid-tech device. So if you have 7 levels lying around, or you can ask me about it later, you can Velcro it on there and voice with that. On. I'm going to skip this for now. All right. Let's hear from some other members of the team.
Describe the profile of a student with whom you are using or anticipate using the Bliss tactile symbols.
I've been trialing Bliss symbols with a 20-year-old in my classroom who is blind. She has no eyeball in one eye, and then she has a retinal displacement in the other one. She also is diagnosed with an intellectual disability.
So the student is a primary kindergarten age student who has a variety of needs due to a rare genetic disorder. Due to her physical and medical needs, she's not able to access the more typical communication system.
I could consider different types of children, not just the student with a vision impairment. I'd consider those with multiple sensory impairments, possibly vision and hearing. I would definitely consider any child. You often hear teachers say, well, he's too low. And so any child that I think maybe they're not ready to attend to some of the visual boards, I would definitely introduce these. I know I've had a lot of students, even with autism, that really like to fidget and hold things. So I think I would use these as a way to almost supplement the communication with another system.
The students that I would use this kind of system with would be students who, well, visually impaired, with kind of limited communication skills, limited verbal speech, who just kind of need some fundamental beginnings of beginning to communicate in a way that they understand.
I think back to one particular student that I had, and she had fetal alcohol syndrome. And with fetal alcohol syndrome, you've got really some atypical contrast. And so for her, she always liked to fidget. She almost needed something in her hands to hold. And I would have definitely used these with that child because they would have been really beneficial. So for her, that's one of the first classrooms we're going to target and see because she has got hearing impairment and then she's got cognitive impairment. And she's also had a very transient lifestyle. So life has been very inconsistent for her. So we want to have a very consistent system when we're starting out with 20 of the symbols.
When would you use the Bliss tactile symbols with a visually impaired or non-speaking student?
So we wanted something that was easy to make, that was long-lasting, that could be, you know, carried by the student themselves. And also on top of that, like something that could help develop the student's language and literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So Bliss symbol fit all of that. Bliss symbols can help like increase language use and to answer like predetermined questions during a lesson. That's like one of the main uses that my student does. Also they use Bliss symbols as a schedule so that they can anticipate what's coming next and they can also anticipate what's expected of them. So we wanted something that was easy to make, that was long lasting, that could be carried by the student themselves. I mean, they're very durable, which is another huge advantage because I have a lot of sensory seeking students and sensory reliant students in my classroom who enjoy using the tactile symbols for to help them focus during the day. But if one of those gets lost, I can put one in the software and 24 hours later I've got it again for 2 years.
Okay.
I feel it's really important with these students that we use the symbols to communicate with them as well as for them to be able to communicate with us. And you know, for so many of these kiddos with the reduced vision, all of a sudden they're just moved or they arrive at places and they don't know. So we were trying to use the symbols more of like that go and finish to represent things that are kind of more abstract.
So I would pick it because trying to get kids to kind of just tap on something that does not differentiate in any sort of way, such as with any kind of communication device where it's just a flat button. It's not as meaningful, they don't want to explore it. It takes so much effort to try to get them to touch something, as opposed to them having a chance to just feel something and run their fingers over it and explore it independently. Try to get them to just touch something on their own rather than me having them like hold their hand over hand. I'd rather them start to develop their independence that way.
Many of the students that we work with, especially some of the low incident students, they don't have enough experience holding a variety of objects. And I think that this might be a more engaging way to start using a language system rather than like a regular typical communication board. You know, my hope is that we're starting with very young children when we're introducing this. Although I do have a certain classroom right now that I'm trying to introduce it. Actually, we are introducing it. And it's a middle school girl who has a vision impairment and cognitive disability and a lot of behaviors right now. And she needs a form of communication. So I'm working with some teachers there to try to introduce it. I would like to see a set in every classroom that is self-contained as a supplement. And there's a lot of flexibility with them, so I would try to match the vocabulary being used in a classroom so it's an alternative and not necessarily one or the other. I think we often hold our students with disabilities to a higher standard where they only get one means of communication. And I would look at this as just a powerful tool as a part of a communication system. Any child that is not responding to a typical communication system, or any child who's slowly progressing on another communication system, I might supplement it with this as a tactile means to support communication with the system. Every classroom that has those students that somebody thinks doesn't have potential, I would definitely want a set of these in there.
What advantages you see in using the Bliss tactile symbols with students?
So she, in the past, had been using symbols that we created using the Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired Dictionary. And those were working okay, but they're handmade. and not the same person all the time can make the symbols, so there is room for inconsistencies based on how we perceive the symbols, and then also the materials that are available to us at any given time. Everyone else in my class has a diagnosis of intellectual disability or multiple disability. And the fact that they're interested in the symbols and that they want to learn with my 20-year-old student, you know, shows me the accessibility that bliss symbols have. They've been through the washing machine and the dryer. they've been ran over, they've been thrown across the room, and they're still usable.
So the more we looked into this, the beauty of the bliss symbols is that it exists, you know, it's an existing system or whatever, and it's always easy to create a new one that's already standardized instead of starting over and recreating. The consistency was really nice. As they move programs, that part, you know, going to remain the same. Their size is nice. There are a lot of things that already exist out there that are tactile, if you will, simple. They can often end up being very big. So the size of these is perfect, that they can always be with the student. It's important. I also like to, the amount of information on them is yes. Just enough. Often there's too much on things. Students can end up being distracted versus getting the needed information.
They seem more inclined to touch it. Uh-huh. I think that has to be the biggest thing. They seem more inclined to explore it on their own without me having to constantly grab their hand and be like, you push this button, you don't know where it is, don't know what it looks like, push this button. As opposed to they put their hand over it and they just even touching it sometimes because I have it on top of an AAC device, they put their hand over it and they explore it and it triggers the sounds and now they're linking sound to symbol. And I love that.
You know, one of the benefits to the bliss symbols is it's a generative system. There's so many options. It's a full vocabulary system. There's 3,000 symbols at our fingertip that we can produce. So there's nothing that we can't work on to teach that child language. I like these particular tactile symbols because, well, they're easy to hold. So it's engaging. It's something to hold where it's just, you know, you're always trying to find different manipulatives to get kids interested, and our kids often are, they don't have the opportunity to manipulate things. You really do need that more simple shape, and so one of the advantages to the bliss symbols is they're very simple shapes, and when you combine the shapes, then it actually makes more generative language. Yeah, I just think it has so much potential. I'm really excited about them.
Okay, so what questions do you have for us?
I think I may know the answer, just want to confirm. Within your software, we started with Fitzgerald with our we made some core boards, but then because our school system was using the unique learning system, which happens to be the Goossens color coding system, we switched that. I'm assuming if we want to, we can just simply switch the colors and see.
Well, what's the limit you load into your printer?
Thank you. That's what I
yes.
figured. So.
Yes,
okay.
You can. We're going to repeat for the sake of anybody who's captioning. You can change the color of the symbols, the filament or the symbols, to 3D print them.
What do you use to like transport them around to different
Great segue to the next section.
Okay, great.
We will show you what you can use to transport them around to different spots in the next section.
Repeating.
Uh-huh. Back there in the back.
I have a comment first. The video is great. Really, really helpful as far as wrapping your head around this in general. So the ones that you handed out to us to keep are two colors. Is that from a two-color printer and from the printer at once, or do they affix two?
The question is, how did you print them in two different colors?
Yes, I had expected. So, no, it's a one extruder printer. You just got to stop the print at some point and change filaments.
Okay, thank you.
Is there still a question in the middle there?
Yeah. I have a question. I have a student that I've worked with for years that was using some of those traditional tactile symbols. And they get destroyed really fast. Now is, you know, in a transition program, would you suggest switching now to this?
I would suggest, yes, switching now better than before.
Okay.
The question was, is it okay if a student has been learning the traditional system for ages, but it's never been sustainable, and whether you should? I would highly recommend trying this because this might be faster and more durable.
Have they been super successful with the other system?
Maybe.
So it's good, and as one of the SLPs mentioned, that it's always, it's good to supplement and see first before like totally changing, and if they are getting into it, and then shift it maybe.
Yeah, I'd say if there's something they've really learned, you know, don't take that away from them.
Yeah.
But add. Mm-hmm. Other questions?
I was just gonna follow up for when you made these. What type of filament did you use?
What type of
PLA.
Okay. Did you use ELA?
PLA.
PLA, sorry. ELA is English Language Arts.
I'm wondering about the size. I will show you some practice I use myself for. I spoke to you earlier for children who are deaf and blind, and we've been discussing the size of it because it's easily handheld. But a lot of people with deaf blindness would like to more feel it, so we made them bigger. We don't use bliss symbols in this case. We would like to show you some of my examples, but we made them bigger. Why? What is the reason for this size? Is it just
so? Yeah. Why that size? And by, again, these are just the default symbols that you can download and print right now. But the designer, you can change the shape. That's one of the parameters in the designer that you can set is, would you like it, increase the size by X percent? And it will do that. You just put a number in and boom, it's that much bigger.
It's proportional.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, everything's proportional on it. And then you change the thickness independently of that.
Yeah.
How was that chosen? What drove it? Mostly it's the conformational characteristics of the bliss symbols themselves.
Yeah.
Initially, the space up top was reserved for an indicator. They can go below. There are two lines that are on that. They actually have names. They're part of the bliss language, and the symbol's location relative to those two lines is part of the definition of the symbol. So they can go below. I just was trying to make sure that there was enough space for all of those elements if we wanted to include them. But yeah, you can certainly scale them as much as you'd like.
Yeah. And what I like about your presentation was sometimes you can use a symbol that's not directly reflecting the meaning of it. For example, we had a hammer, and it meant to go to work. But for another person, it was my father, because his father was always using the hammer. So in one case, we had a cup, a mug, and when you turn it 90 degrees, it became a suitcase. So for the one was a coffee, and for the other, it was going home. Mm-hmm. So it's very important how you use these symbols.
Right. Yeah. So use them to get the effect you want.
Yeah.
Anything else? Okay, great. Then I was going to take over at this point anyway. So, all right, in the time that remains, let's look at some third-party and DIY products that you may choose to use along with our tactile symbols. So there's a company out there called Augmentative Resources, and they make a number of products for the display and management of communication symbols. So these two pictures up here on the left are of their Bliss tactile symbol carrier that they created specifically for the display management and transport of our tactile symbols. And it's shown here in both closed and open configurations. It has a rigid spine, and on the far side over there is a padded separator. And they're really there to keep the symbols from clacking together in closed configuration. And I have used the space of the rigid spine to attach a 3D printable message builder. It's shown below in a little bit larger form with a couple of our symbols for go and stop attached. That's also available for free download and 3D printing from the Printables website. On the far right is their trifold choice board with a few of our symbols attached.
What was that company called again?
Augmentative Resources. And so we've got pages up here and scan QR codes and all that kind of stuff. Plus, it's in the notes of the presentation. If your favorite AAC app will let you substitute your graphics for put them on some of the buttons of the app, you can take advantage of the free Bliss symbols from BCI to create an interface, and you can come up and take a close look at these afterward, but to create an interface for your student that's both consistent and simple to understand. The slide shows two images, one of TD Snap and the other is of Proloquo to Go with the default symbols replaced with their Bliss symbol equivalents. Oh, I forgot to say, thank you for bringing that up, that we also make it a little easier for you to put those on your app because we make all of those symbols in our 242 symbol set that we use available as downloadable PNG files from a web page on the site. So, the VoiceIt can be used along with our tactile symbols to give you a multi-sensory experience, give your student a multi-sensory experience. The VoiceIt is a simple DIY device that reads the RFID tag inside or attached to some object, and then plays a recording based on the word that it finds on the tag. You can build one of these in less than 45 minutes using about $130 in off-the-shelf parts and a screwdriver. The RFID tags themselves can be found online for anywhere from 15 to 30 cents a piece. And when you come up later, you can see lots of examples of what those tags look like for different purposes. We provide free voice files in both English and Spanish for all 242 of the symbols. Again, I'm just telling you about all the stuff that is available for our symbols. But it's a simple matter to add additional recordings for additional concepts, even additional languages, maybe Dutch, who knows. And then extending the recordings can allow you to give in the same manner, can let you give voice to things like plush toys and children's books, again, using the same device. So the slide shows a VoiceIt box surrounded by several of the Bliss tactile symbols. So the folks at 3D Learning Shop on Etsy, they made a business already of 3D printing the Project Core symbols and then selling them. You may find it a lot easier to just purchase these things rather than printing, you know, going through the effort of finding a printer and printing them and all that yourselves. So I went to them and said, hey, would you guys be interested in printing and selling our symbols, as well as assembling VoiceIt boxes and selling those? And they said, oh yeah. So the slide shows a screenshot of one of their offers on their Etsy shop that you can take advantage of. I bring them up along with Augmentative Resources only if there's some chance you might want to take advantage of them. We aren't financially tied to either one. I just wanted to find ways to reduce barriers for you. That's backwards. All right, so can't leave here without a couple of things. One is to say that this is the work of a team of volunteers. And so they deserve credit for their work. The other thing I want to say is Anita is on a grant here from her school district, and they require her to get feedback on her performance. So she's going to make a request of you to
I just passed on my computer.
She'll get some information about you so you can fill out a form for her. That's really all we have for today. Please come up and take a look at all these things on the front table. Ask us any additional questions you may have. And thanks for coming.
Who? Turtles.
Does it tell you when to stop the printer and change the filament?
Depends on your printer. Depends on your printer.
Okay.
So that Prusa that I talked about in the slicer software, you're familiar with the 3D printing process.
Yeah.
You can say switch color filaments at this point.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. So I've only printed like the cores of the 3D core symbols. That's the only thing I've
really. They're all in one color.
So it's all one color. Everything I've done is all one color so far. So I suppose you can do that. So that's awesome. And thank you for the voice. That's incredible.
Change the language, by the way, with the little fobs. Yeah. Just put
Espanol.
That's incredible. Thank you. You just totally made my whole conversation. This is great, Rachel. We have a DeafBlind resource team.
Uh-huh.
We go out and work with the kids in our county. Our DeafBlind, they've been using that before.
Yeah.
So much more. But the video that you made about the symbols, I've been around for a long time. So it's my 33rd year working.
Okay. So you have really
with the symbols, yeah. But never really got the whole picture of why and how and your couple-minute video really solidified why.
Oh, I'm glad that she asked me to make it in the first place. It wouldn't hurt.
That's incredible, yeah. So that will definitely clear things up and help me explain it.
Yes.
So, but I'll be sharing your video. So, and thanks for sharing this information, like for us to then share with our team.
Yeah, please. You guys are the entry point for this knowledge.
Very excited about it. So thank
you. Well, I was going to say thank you for sharing, not only here, but on your website, all of your stuff is available. I've made the voice it earlier this year.
You did?
So, yeah, I just don't have, I didn't do the jack for the speaker. So
okay, and that's a recent change to the design.
I have equipment to make another one. So my next one will have the jack for the. But having all of this open source, it's really great. I'm getting ready to do the Bliss symbols. What printer do you use to do this? And so, your website. I have so much info there.
Well, I have some printers that I recommend.
Okay.
And because people have different goals in life, so I also have key guards, which are big as far as printers go. And so,
okay.
So these are small, though. These could be printed on Monoprice Mini. They can be printed on a bed this big.
Yeah.
But the bigger the bed.
Really good. I have a paper bot replica. I think it's a replica. Okay. But this is so much cheaper. I've done the project for two tactile symbols, but these are like the print feels like a better quality.
Oh really?
No, yeah.
Maybe it's the MakerBot. I'm not sure. This is all. I did all these on a Prusa.
Okay.
Yeah, and but I also have a artillery sidewinder for the bigger bed, and it does just as fine a job.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's an old MakerBot.
E-D-Y.
Just the A-D-Y.
It could be. Yeah, your they're not on this one, but like your rail is like better, and
that's better on the side. Then it will be on the top surface.
Okay.
Even the Prusa is
you can change it to like inside.
You've got to keep it off the top. Any horizontal surface, you've got to keep it
off. Nice. Okay, yeah, because yours is much better than
your maker bot. You could. And one of the reasons I said make your stuff flexible, don't just give me an STL file.
Right.
But I want to move all that braille to the sides. So they put a lot of variation on the sides as well, so you couldn't put braille there, you have to be flat.
Yeah, and I think their sides are to be more about what the part of speech is,
all
right?
It's class,
like, So, well, thank you so much. This has been a really helpful presentation. I'm so happy to see you here, and I'm on your YouTube channel, and you guys are on Instagram, too.
The channel is just a place where I put videos.
I know, but it's good. I saw this when you guys first put something out there about the little holder, and it's really cool. But thank you for sharing all of it. It's really great.
It's so wonderful to hear that you have a committee.
I live in Northwestern Ontario.
Well, it's not my personal community. It's BCI community.
But regardless, it's just in our district, we have some of our stuff.
Okay.
We have variations. And I'm like, isn't that going to confuse students? And one opinion I hear, and I agree with it to a degree, is that, well, if there's subtle differences, it's kind of like when you go to another country, like England, and they have like an accent. It's like, yes, I can agree with that to a degree. I like some sort of consistency, just especially for somebody who's struggling, you know? So.
I mean, I would ask them again, so what about the student who feels the difference and says, this is significant? This is something that's a
different thing. Anyway, thank you, that was great. That was wonderful. So. So have a good day. Oh, did you want to
get it? Yes, indeed. We're trying different shapes. There's a repeating of the symbol.
Yeah, I'll feel free to reach out.
Trying to both sides, just experience what they like the best.
Trying to get this into
and eventually we choose these. This one we
have some printers around, but they're really
this is the way we
print. I don't think they print very accurately anyway.
Yeah.
Just in all.
Your choice of printer doesn't really matter unless you're dealing with something, some kind of filament that's really esoteric. So I just, everything is PLA.
Yeah.
Simple, easy to print.
Yeah.
All kinds of colors of the rainbow. So, yeah.
But I would ask if you could integrate RFID chips, because I do it myself. And I've baked, wood, built this one for myself as well. I put them underneath the table. So they, you don't need to push them, but they can shove them.
Yeah, so it depends on how thick the table is.
No, it's about the size that is...
near field, RFID tags, you know, they have to be within a couple centimeters.
Yeah, we have it about 2-3 centimeters.
Okay. And, maybe
and also how do you call it, in a wheelchair.
Sure.
The table from a wheelchair, but...
Yeah, the tray.
The tray, yeah. We put it underneath it.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Then it comes down to how good the reader is.
Yeah.
So this is the reader that's in here costs, I think you get two of them for $8.
Yeah, it's the SC522, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's so inexpensive, but then their read distance is super gradient. So you can, you don't have to touch, but you do have to get close enough.
Yeah. You use it with Arduino or something?
Yeah, there's Arduino there.
It's the same idea.
You guys use Arduinos as well?
Yeah. I picked a picture, but it's not very important. But I mean,
yeah, so you can see it right there. It's underneath this ribbon cable.
Yeah.
It's Arduino Maker.
But what is this?
This is the breakout board.
Okay.
This allows you to assemble it with a screwdriver.
Yeah, I made a PCB myself.
Yeah, it was
so much easier.
I don't want to, I'm sure it is if you have a fab lab, but I want to be able to turn to SLPs and folks and say, you got screwdriver skills?
Yeah.
You can put this together.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, thank you for your presentation. It's nice, yeah. It's a bit the same as we already do.
Yeah.
But not with list symbols, so that's...
Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're very close. List symbols are much more popular in Europe than they are in the United States.
Yeah, but for people I work with the deaf, blind, executive impaired, we use all kinds of symbols, and not especially for simple list symbols. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I can find information in the handouts.
Yes, it has everything.
Yeah.
Has everything. And also, my email address is on the first slide.
Is that on the...
No, it's not. I added this after the fact when I realized we hadn't provided any points of contact.
I'll take a picture.
Sure, absolutely.